This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
You're more and more prepared to be expressive with this want, because the music really, you know, you have to know about this, the melos. Is that relates to melody is translatable in poetry. This is the part, the little particle, and so in the poem, in the essay Projective Verse, Olson, this is the thing that really opened up a great deal, said your focus, this whole mind, your ego, your intelligence, everything, right down in there, and low. You don't know anything more when you're writing a poem because something else knows everything and is going to say everything. And you want the dance, the melody is. I'm talking now, though. I'm very much talking about myself in writing a poem. This relates directly to Bob, who writes songs, whose major poem in the form is a song, whereas my major form is an orchestrated form. But both of them have got to pay attention to this sort of thing. Flowing through. Now there, when you talk about your care and your attention, it's that simple to have the care and attention right where you are in the poem to keep that mellow particle so that you feel that. And actually, when we had to force ourselves back to it, we did get somebody it was Alan this morning who was saying, why does George Bowring say RT? Artichoke. I wanted agriculture. It was not, but artichoke. I suppose I wanted to choke Bowring. agri, and then culture became the word. Now, see, meaning operates right away because I put the word choke in, and he had the word culture by making this division. But also, it was to get a feeling like agri. And we would, you only have to look at the things in letters, and frequently I still have it in poems, very harsh transitions that have to be there for me to even feel them, for me to take care because otherwise I would take for granted. Now, what always happened to me early in poetry, since I sat down in high school and learned I am all over the place, is that I would never really arrive at a melody. I'd arrive at a kind of, and we know what that is. And there you went, right? Wow. But there is something about getting more organs when they're just jumping up and down on an I am. There's something about the tonic thing of the whole poem that it can have variety. And the complaint about these damn things is not only that they're not in the language, which anybody can show, but it is that what is in the language allows such a variety and such a real grace, like the graces that I talked about, the vowels having some kind of loveliness of going into the air in their variety, it allows a great grace and rhythm. So that all our damn thing about free verse, and it might as well be, I think that's fine to call it free verse, because the freedom is to open up to this variety. But let's call it the most various use, to use the most various thing that so that you can open up. This gives you more area in which these roots, branches, and so forth can go. But does that explain something about what might be a decent way to think of the real question of care? Because I think for the total form, for instance, I find that in total form, some poets have never had a sense of total form. Eliot is seems to be deficient in it, but I have much the same deficiency often. Both of us work with symphonic forms, and Alan does. But an open form that becomes amazing. There are some things that become amazing to me in form, like the cantos, where they're not dependent in that way, and they flow in and out of each other. As they become more and more free, they actually become more and more amazing formal achievements, and allow for instance, the danger of them is that they allow for violent splits, as actually happened. They allow for so much of the man to exist that sometimes he can't even find his own boundaries. But then that's just. After all, you're not going to get into the poem without trouble of soul, and without peril, and that has something to do with the outline of yourself, and with the only root of the poem being toward freedom, or else it really can't survive. It can't find it can ride a time of full tide, but actually it's meant to live, it does have to have freedom of being able to go beyond and out in the world. That's the question. Do you have any sense of peril?
Well,
as a thing experienced in the poem?
Yeah, that if I say the wrong thing, I'll put myself in hell.
That's moral peril, yeah.
Well, that's the only kind of peril. What do you mean by peril?
But what I mean by peril is something that has to do with the falling in an abyss. I think maybe we'd each have a distinct sense of what's peril. Certainly, mine was loss of boundary because the variety becomes. In other words, it's the peril of my. This is part of my intense sense of the care and then caution, care in that sense. That we go along with each of these things is that it's perilous to realize, perilous at some level whereas actually even your message, Alan, is that it's not perilous to realize.
Well, lately I'm getting some messages.
Robert, do you know
I want to cancel messages.
Charles Bird, he says you cannot deprecate, you cannot, in the sense where you get this tremendous sensation of utter block, everything will stop, everything will be prevented, you small and all the openings of your body are closed. This is the sensation of peril that I have in writing. I feel that state beginning to occur. In other words, then to me, this peril, the peril is in risking this the sense of if this, I feel that for the instant of that writing, this is the only way I can go. I cannot go any other way. If I am prevented there, it's the only time of peril. One time, other ones come later. One time in Mallorca, we were very, quote, insecure. We just arrived, children were upset, we had a problem finding a house, and Graves invited us to come have dinner. He said, you know, in a sense, there's an act of generosity, he said, we give us a little relief from this cottage. And we were sitting in this living room, I remember, and I was extremely nervous at him, nervous at myself. And at one moment, he simply reached back on the table and said, here, look at this. And he handed me this small Etruscan statue, and I was utterly, you know, terror-stricken that I would drop it because I was not capable of holding it. And that is another sense of peril. These are just, as you say, I think they're all personal. But the risk is, I mean, the risk is open. So if you can take no risk, then that is the risk of your risk at all. And the kingfish, the sense of the risk, I think, is being willing to go. You know, I'll go.
Yeah, I feel peril when the boundaries dissolve and
I think
accept the outside.
Part of what I mind was back to your question about care or what was the other term you used in the poem? Discipline, yes. Because, for instance, in the question of the large form of the poem, and often often people ask, how do you know the poem is, how do you know when you're through in a poem? How do you know you come to the end if somebody doesn't tell you it's 16 lines and that every line has 10 syllables? How do you know you've come to the end of it? Well, actually, you're just as dependent. I mean, you see, when I say I cling to my care to this, then I have a great deal of faith. I do have a combination of a great deal of faith that the poem's going to be realized when my attention's here. And that's where I am in the poem. At the same time, I have a total form, a feeling of form, which actually didn't. In the beginning, I wrote worse than any of the poems I have seen in that collection of poems, and some of them are pretty sad. But the worst of it was since I was in a university and on the staff of the university magazine as an eager beaver freshman. A couple of them got printed. That's the worst of the entire event. They belonged way down at the bottom of existence or non-existence someplace here. Actually, I wrote for, since I decided I wanted to be a poet when I was in high school, and writing imitation Robert Browning monologues, between 1936 and 1946, I really didn't have in any of that time the feeling of knowing that I had realized any form in a poem. Now, I never worried about it, so it always seems peculiar to me when people ask me, how do you know you're through a poem? What was it like? I can remember what it was like. I wrote my first book, Heavenly City, Earthly City, was attempts at an elegiac form. And I sort of had a rough feeling that I would go until this thing assumed would reach a crisis. I knew there was a kind of crisis of excitement, and then that would have a coda. Now, that's my basic form all the way through, actually. I discovered there's something in me that when it enters this kind of something, certainly relative to an ecstasy, has a kind of an area in the poem that goes about like this at a fairly high pitch of excitement. That is the area in which I'm getting excited enough and which I collect material that will be that will carry me through the time I know this seizure is going to take place. It is like a seizure. You know, one of the things you know, you don't know at first and it doesn't work, is you do not know how long they take. You haven't experienced them enough to know this very simple sort of pattern that you have. And now I know, for instance, that in this period I have to gather quite a bit in order for me to satisfy the form. This is a simple form of now my own tonic physical body having to have a satisfaction, a nervous and a glandular satisfaction in the curve of this poem. Now I know I did discover by the one of the things I realized in the form of the medieval scenes is that this will then all of a sudden produce something like an epileptic point, which will be a sadistically charged or cruel or violent, a kind of violent, but then it's such, and now actually, and my poems now often that, for instance, in the Pindar poem, that's all of a sudden that the puns on the rose and the thorn turn to be the thorn. How in the hell did Rilke come into that poem with that? Now, and where had I read it? You know, I didn't remember it. It hadn't been on my mind ever till I came to the place and suddenly knew. But that's why that thorn, 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 rose, thorn. He died of blood poisoning from the thorn on a rose. And then right after that, the poem has, at some level, then I have my greatest, this point is the point of no, it can't be called satisfaction at all, nor dissatisfaction, because it's a point that we could even say was a jump. I mean, there's just no, certainly in the writing of this area of poem, I'm not conscious of what I write in that whole area when those puns begin. I am in excitement where I literally have, all through here I'm gathering through that the Cupid and Psyche thing, my whole meaning mind is working, gathering all the material I can, and it's really in order to have something intelligible happen here. That later I can see, as a matter of fact, now when I'm describing it, is one of the very first times I've asked myself, except that certainly I didn't know why in the world Rilke and the thorn came in there. Then there's a coda. And the coda is extremely important to me. It's as if, I mean, as this period is too. In other words, all of these are patterns, and every one of these patterns have a relation that in certain poems will be completely satisfied for me, and that usually needs a long poem. There are other patterns. There are poems, there's a pattern that comes in sequences, but almost all of them, even in the sequence, will have this moment which will be the disclosure of something, as I said, that may account for the fact that I like to imitate people and take masks, that actually is not shocking to you. I mean, it may seem, what is the shock in Rilke's dying? I don't know. I mean, I'm not interested in psychoanalyzing or knowing anything about it. But in the terms of a psychoanalyst, I could go into, you know, you might find out something about this thing called Duncan. But I'm not interested in this thing called Duncan. I'm interested in this poem and this thing called Duncan only so far as I can make use of it to get that material to make this pattern be. And that pattern is one you do find only by that's part of your adventure in the poem is to, and of course the funny thing is you do I think we do have simple patterns. We keep wanting to have them have more life and more room. I mean this pattern actually could, that's what I mean by the business of having more in it so that more becomes satisfied through it. Because a seizure is for one thing an area that controls you so that your control, and this business then of controlling this through it, there's a dance and a counterpart between your control and its control over you because it wants to satisfy going through this thing.
Very comfortable.
Is in the other room, can you see people's, their faces more?
Yes.
I can't see you. For instance, I can't locate, it took me a long time to locate you when you were speaking, for instance. I really couldn't. The voice was over here in this area, and I couldn't locate who was speaking, so I didn't have any recognition.
Pardon?